A seven-day rolling average of 6,626 COVID-19 tests in this country. To date, a total of 914,421 tests have been carried out. And the current method of testing is, it's not painful, but it's a bit uncomfortable. I've done it. It's maybe just not something that you would look forward to doing again. And so there have been, along with all this talk of vaccines, a talk about whether there's an alternative, a less invasive sort of test, and how close it might be to being ready and available here in New Zealand. We'll enter Kiwi Steph Tan, who is a scientist, and she's been working on exactly this project at the Yale School of Public Health. Hi.
Kia ora, Jesse.
Nice to have you in.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
How do you find yourself back in Auckland, by the way, if you're a researcher at Yale?
Yeah, I'm doing research remotely, and I've had my Zoom sessions with people up at Yale, so that's been really nice to do.
How's it been going?
Yeah, it's really exciting, thrilling, a lot of long hours, especially Dr. Anne Wiley. She's a Kiwi research scientist who's up at Yale, who I'm working with. And she's, you know, really putting in the hard hours with the rest of the team, and they're doing a phenomenal job.
Yeah. Is that just by chance, by the way, that there's two Kiwis working on this?
Yes, it is by chance. I actually reached out to her regarding it as I saw her in the news working with the NBA.
Wow. Okay. So there's been a bit of a call for wider testing in New Zealand, and that there's not enough being done. I just described what the test was. Does that have something to do with it, the fact that people find it a bit off-putting, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I've had people from Air New Zealand and the government tell me that the nasopharyngeal swab, aka giant swab through the nose to the back of the throat, that it's really invasive and uncomfortable, especially for the elderly, the disabled, young children, so many audiences who are unable to really comply with that test, whereas saliva offers, you know, a painless method. You just spit in a tube and you're all good to go.
Yeah, so you have the I suppose the discomfort's one way of putting it, or just
absolutely,
the intimidation factor of doing that test balanced against the fact that it's so important to keep testing even when there's apparently no COVID in the community, when people are feeling complacent.
Oh, exactly, yeah, because up to 40%, even 70% in some populations in the world have people who with COVID who actually don't display symptoms, and then they're able to actually pass it on to other people who may get symptoms. For example, there are also pre-symptomatic people. These are the people who don't show symptoms, but they have so much virus being shed. And that's the most amount of virus being shed right before you get symptoms. So people are walking around, maybe waiting for their test result if they don't have any symptoms. And then bang, they get their positive result. And then by that time, it's already spread in the community.
So can you tell us when the project began for you to start working on this so-called saliva test? How did you get involved, and when did you know there might be something in it?
Oh, absolutely. So when I was in the States, that's when the pandemic escalated really early on, and that's led me back to New Zealand. And I saw there was so much urgency for all these different testing methods to come out. It needed to be fast, cheap, reliable, and frequent testing. And that's so much harder to get done when you only have swabs. So all this research was being done, for example, by Dr. Anne Wiley at the Yale School of Public Health. And I saw that method and it was just so incredibly promising. I thought, why don't we have that here? It would be amazing to have, you know, people be able to fly again, just opening up everything again. And if you have that testing frequently and so robust, you don't even need to go into lockdown again.
So how hard is it to develop a saliva test for COVID-19?
Well, that's the thing. The brilliant scientists have done it. They've sorted out a saliva test that's, you know, available to low-resource nations. So that means New Zealand, we have those lab resources to do it. And the scientists right now by the government, they're working on really enhancing that method to make sure it's accurate enough to be released to the public. So feasible, definitely.
Mm. How have you gone about it? How have you devised the test?
So I personally myself did not make up this test method. It was the phenomenal researchers up at Yale that I'm working with. Mm. I was the one who just proposed that we should bring it, you know, trans-Tasman, bring it to the Southern Hemisphere.
Thank you for doing that.
thank you very much.
What do you know about how it was developed?
What do I know about how it was developed? Well, Anne Wiley, she's been working with saliva for 10 years and with, you know, pneumococcal disease, and that required a lot of training already, and she already had all that knowledge up in her bag, and so all she saw was the opportunity to provide quick testing that was non-invasive, and she that's what she did. Finger snap. She just, you know, set up this method with an amazing team. And I saw the use of that here. And I also conduct a research evaluation with her. So I look at all the saliva methods that are being used across the world. I compare the different methods and we try to figure out why there are some differences. For example, why some testing methods aren't as accurate and why some methods are incredibly accurate.
What are they looking for in the saliva?
They're looking for RNA, so virus material that can be detected in the same machine that you would put a swab through. For example, you get a swab and then you run the samples through what is called a PCR machine. And you do the exact same thing with saliva, except what Anne's done is that she's learned how to cut out some of the steps that take up a lot of money and time. And so that's why you can get results on the same day if you use Yale's saliva method.
Mm. And so what sort of challenges then have they come across along the way in getting this to a point where it's ready to be rolled out?
So people have been concerned about the accuracy of saliva. But the thing is, no testing method is 100% accurate. And when people are too busy debating which method is the most accurate, that's the thing. Saliva's not trying to take over the swabs. It's trying to add as a supplement because you're trying to expand testing capacity. So swabs and saliva, people can have choice. And obviously, when people are getting tested frequently, for example, air crew who, you know, don't want to swab every few days, they're obviously going to choose saliva. So challenges were people were questioning its accuracy, but the thing is, Anne's study at our method at Yale, we found that it's 94% accurate with saliva, while 91% with swabs. And then there are other methods across the world that show 100% with saliva and lower with swabs and maybe higher in swabs and saliva. It honestly is dependent on how you do the method. You got to think about it like a recipe. You know, a lot of people know how to make, let's say, what's your favorite fruit, Jesse?
Oh, that's a very, very difficult question to give me without warning, Steph.
Favorite baked goods?
I'm going to say chocolate chip cookies.
Chocolate chip cookies. There we go. We have tons of people in the world making chocolate chip cookies. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to just pick anyone. You want to pick one that you know is so reliable and is just going to taste amazing every time. And that's what we're trying to do here. Now that we're showcased to the government, as I'm working with the newly appointed COVID surveillance team, we're telling them that, hey, as long as you use a solid method in which New Zealand does have the resources to do this, then you can get a super accurate test. So it really should be, you know, getting it out already. That's why ESR, they're trialing the saliva method. They're taking positive samples from the quarantine facilities, using that to test how they can get their saliva method up to par with the Yale's one. And they actually are testing Yale's method and how that works with their New Zealand lab resources.
So this is already happening in New Zealand, sort of, behind the curtain.
Exactly. We're at that trial stage, and hopefully in a few weeks we can see it, you know, more accurate. Where Anne and I have assessed their data to try to figure out ways that we can get their accuracy back up. And I'm really hopeful that they're going to do it.
And is there a way in which this latest community outbreak, the August cluster as they call it, has actually helped your progress?
Exactly, yes. It's a really crazy silver lining of this pandemic that before the outbreak, it was really hard pushing for saliva testing. I kept on doing it, but it was hard because they said, hey, we have no positive samples to test with, so even if we want to do it, we can't. And then the outbreak happened, and that's what kicked off the saliva trialing. And now it's really picked up. Huge collaborations are happening. So many groups are getting involved. And New Zealand are certainly ready to have the saliva testing.
Mm. And so you are obviously quite a positive and optimistic person. However, people who work with government on a regular basis learn that sometimes things take a lot longer than they expect it's going to. So, I mean, how realistically, when might we be able to go for a saliva test instead of the nasal swab?
Realistically, I'd like to think in a few weeks, especially if people are expecting a vaccine maybe early 2021, then we definitely want to get the testing out before then. Even though saliva testing is necessary or any testing is necessary once the vaccine comes, we definitely want to push for it to come ASAP, so within the next 2 months. But the thing is, I really want to set up a nice collaboration between public sector and private sector of health. There shouldn't be such a distinction, for example, relying only on government to do it. And so that's why I've also been working with private labs and other groups who are really willing to get this push going on and willing to work with the method.
Where do you think we'll see it employed for the first time and in what area? Do you imagine a company like Air New Zealand might pick it up and start using it as a kind of an early adopter?
Exactly. I think the earliest use would be based on priority, in which that's the border, because that's the main way that we're going to stop all those new overseas cases from coming in. So first priority, the border. Then we also have other tourism industry, other people in the aviation industry, all the essential workers, especially quarantine hotel staff, they will definitely be a priority. So I could see it easily being rolled out in hotels, you know, just having people in quarantine have test every day. Because as we've seen from the recent one of our recent COVID cases, we've had someone who tested negative throughout their whole 14-day isolation. And then after the 14 days, they came out positive. And turns out saliva can actually detect cases even better in asymptomatic people than swabs can.
Amazing. And in terms of speed, how does it compare to, how does getting the result compare to what they're doing currently with the swab?
So much faster, because first of all, there's collection. You spit in a tube, that's way quicker and easier, less messy than the current swabs. And then second of all, lab processing. They've cut out this big time-consuming step. So that already cuts out the time. And then delivering results, if we set up some sort of automation system, like notifying people through their phones, a phone app, that's what University of Illinois doing with saliva. They just notify the students on the same day through a phone app. Then that can be really quick.
I could say you're definitely an optimist. I guess the real telling point will be when the government decides that the saliva test is as reliable or better than the swab test and they move the Ministry of Health testing over to that, and presumably that will still be some time away.
Yes, it could be some time away, but as you said, I'm an optimist and I'm determined to see how this goes and really get it going here.
Thanks for coming in. By the way, when you're not working on this, you have your own website. Can we point to that? It's called Nourishing Mind. What did you set that up for?
Sure thing. Actually, it was when I finished my undergraduate studies at Cornell in nutrition science. And I had some time. I had a little gap semester before Yale. And I thought, you know, perfect time to just reflect on my own self. And I learned a lot about mental health in that time and the importance of nutrition and so many other factors, therapy, especially mental health being such a big topic right now in this pandemic. We've had a 78% in mental health referral increases, like across clinics in Auckland and New Zealand. It's really wild but unsurprising that lockdown can really have these detrimental effects on so many people. So I wanted to create a way where people could destigmatize mental health and we could just talk about it, because everybody has mental health and every single person has experienced mental illness. I think about it like physical illness. It's so normal for us to get a cold or a flu and head to the doctors. And when people think of mental illness, they think of it as maybe some people having depression and some people having anxiety. But, you know, everybody faces depression on one day. Everybody faces anxiety on one day. So it's ubiquitous. It's a topic that everybody can relate to. And I really wanted to shed light on that and also just share my personal experiences, because I believe in vulnerability and openness and other people also being the same and sharing their story and finding, you know, just well-being and life enhancement through that.
If you're keen on looking at Steph's website, it's called Nourishing Mind, and there's a link from our website. Steph Tan from Yale School of Public Health, currently in New Zealand. Nice to have you, and thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Jesse.